This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Hello. So today I have a wonderful conversation for you with Stephanie Orr. Steph is a screen printer and the founder of Flat 102 and co-founder of the Indie Collective. Steph created Flat 102 to bring a colourful and uplifting dose of cheerfulness for your home. And the Indie Collective was founded to support local designers and makers and give them an opportunity to be seen on the high street. So I had a great conversation with Steph. So Flat 102 is Steph's product business and she creates screen printed products. I actually didn't know what screen printing was. After talking with Steph, I'm actually really tempted to give it a go. It sounds amazing and really accessible as well. And we also talked a lot about the Indie Collective and particularly about some pop-up shops and events that the Indie Collective ran since 2020. They're not sure yet about their plans for this year, but please do follow Steph and the Indie Collective if you're interested in finding out if they're going to be running any pop-up events this year, because I know that's certainly something they're hoping for. So we have had loads to talk about, from Steph's own creative products business to the work she does with Indie Collective to help promote other retail businesses and products businesses, I should say, and sort of get them into retail spaces. So I really hope you enjoy this conversation and I'd love to introduce you now to Steph. So hi Steph, thank you so much for being here.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Can we please start by you giving an introduction to yourself, your business and what you make and sell, please?
Sure. I'm Steph. I run Flat 102, which is an online shop where I sell my screen printed products. It's mainly prints, wooden wall hangings and cards. And I also run workshops where I teach people to screen print as well. And then alongside that, I also am a co-founder of the Indie Co.
Oh, amazing. Thank you. And we're going to talk about all of these things in more detail. But I think a really good place to start would be screen printing, if that's okay. Can you explain to us what screen printing is and how you got started with it, please?
Yeah, sure. So I'll start with how I got into it. So I was working at Disney at the time when I discovered screen printing. Had a corporate role. It was quite a creative role. It was in marketing. But I was just really missing doing stuff with my hands and being creative and having a tangible product at the end of it. And yeah, creating something that was purely for me. So I did a dressmaking course and various other things, dipped my fingers into different creative bits and bobs. And then I did an evening course on screen printing. It was just 2 hours, really simple screen printing with a paper stencil. And I absolutely fell in love with it. Started making a few bits and bobs here and there for friends and family as presents. And then after I had my son, I decided not to go back to Disney. We'd moved out of London. It was just a long commute. We just couldn't make it work, really. So I decided to pop some bits on Etsy and give them a go. And they started selling, which was great. And then it's just grown from there, really. Done fairs and all sorts of bits and bobs now, which is fab. But it's great. I can work it around the kids, around school and things. And then screen printing, in terms of what it actually is, it's a pretty basic art form. You have a screen that back when screen printing started, because a lot of people know it's silk screen. You get a metal screen or a wooden screen, has lots of fibers across. It used to be silks across, it's now nylon. And you basically create a stencil either from paper or vinyl, or using an exposure unit where you have a permanent stencil on there, and then using a squeegee, which is a lot like the squeegees you use to clean your shower and things. You pull ink across the screen and it goes through where the stencil's open, and then you have your print. So you lift up your screen and you can see what you've done. And that's, I think that's the magical bit. When you lift up that screen, you get that moment of like, oh my gosh, I made that.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's amazing. And yeah, it literally is what it sounds then. And I guess, oh, that's really interesting. And I guess you can screen print all sorts of things then, can you? Because am I right in thinking that you can screen print clothes? I think I've heard of people doing t-shirts before.
Yeah. So most people print onto wood, onto paper or material. So yeah, clothing, bedding, lots of more the high end manufacturers for bedding and things will screen print on, and they'll have huge screens and do it by machine where they screen print onto duvets and sheets and things. You can screen, so you can do your wallpaper, you can do everything. But yeah, you can also print onto wood. I've seen people doing it directly onto their walls as well, which is quite cool. So yeah, it's a really versatile medium to play with.
Oh, excellent. And how, like, what did it take for you to get started? I mean, is it a case of just buying the screen and some ink and off you go, or is there
pretty much more involved in that? Yeah, it's a really accessible craft or art form. You can literally do it on your table. You need a screen and some inks and a squeegee, and that's it. And because you can print making paper stencils, you can literally cut your stencils out at home. So yeah, I started off like that, then invested I think they were like £10, so it wasn't a big investment, in some clamps to hold the screen, because it's quite hard to hold the screen down whilst you're pulling your squeegee, so I can now clamp it in. And the inks that I tend to use are water-based ones, so I just clean them in the kitchen sink, because I don't need any specialist equipment or chemicals to clean those away, which is great. So yeah, it's a really easy one to start at home without any real specialist equipment at all.
So you did that 2-hour workshop, and was that sort of it? After that, did you sort of go away and just
play,
doing it yourself?
Yeah, lots of YouTube watching, lots of trial and error, but lots of frustration with them. I went through a phase where everything I printed had bubbles in it, and I couldn't work out, it was driving me mad. I was ready to throw the towel in completely. And then realised it's because I kept all my inks in the garage and they don't like getting cold. That was it.
Ah.
So once I put them somewhere warm, the bubbles were gone. It's a fun one. And because it isn't expensive to start, you can play quite easily. It doesn't matter if you make loads of mistakes to start with. It's quite fun to play around with.
Yeah, and it does actually sound, you sound really good fun, actually. I'm actually getting a little bit inspired by listening to this.
It's quite
I'm not sure if I'm creative. I always say that, though, but I shouldn't put myself down like that. So where do you get the idea from your designs? Did you have a design background?
No, not at all. My dad's an artist. And I think having someone in your family who is incredibly artistic, I had always said I wasn't creative at all because I couldn't draw. And I think especially at school, if you can't draw, you don't do art, and therefore you're not creative. And it's that, you know, simple. If you're not doing an art GCSE, it's time to move on. Whereas I think having with the screen printing, it made me realise you don't need to be able to draw to be creative. You can be creative in so many ways. And I think that little quarter life crisis I had at Disney, where I was going off and trying my hand at all these different creative pursuits, was actually that creative side that I have inherited from my dad coming out and just trying to find its own place and figuring out where my creative side could be if I am not necessarily the best drawer in the world. So I think from that, a lot of my designs are words based, so a lot of typography, especially now I've had the kids, I've really realized how your surroundings affect you. So I love having like positive phrases and, you know, reminders for them. One of my most popular selling pieces is a plaque that just says "You're awesome" on. And I think those things, you know, kids are bombarded with so much at the moment that just having something there that they're reading, you know, probably daily, sometimes, or not even paying attention to anymore, but subconsciously reminding them how great they are. And same with, you know, I've got a "Cool to Be Kind" print and things like that. I think my things, I just like them to be quite positive, lots of bright colours. I love neon pink, a lot of neon pink. Yeah, and then as I've got my confidence with those, I have started doing more, you know, more traditionally creative things, in terms of, you know, drawings and things. I'm looking at that side of the business more. I'm trying to get a bit braver in putting some designs out there. And I've also got a collaboration with my dad coming up, which is so exciting.
That's really exciting.
Yeah, so he's about that. I am a massive shopaholic, and I love Selfridges, Liberties, all of those guys. And he has done beautiful line drawings at the front of Selfridges, Liberties, Harrods, and Harvey Nichols. So I'm going to screen print a coloured background, and then we're going to print his designs on the top. Yeah, it's so nice to be able to. We did my sister's wedding invites that he drew and designed, and then I printed them. So yeah, it's nice to do another collaboration.
That's really nice.
Yeah,
that's lovely. And I guess what's really fun is, because you were talking about being brave and trying new things, I guess that now you are established and you know what sells, you can try other designs and other things and just sort of see if people buy them. Great. Well, obviously it's not great if they don't buy them, but I mean, what I mean is, it's a good way, isn't it, of, because you have a customer base already, it's a good way of testing out, will people buy different things, definitely, or do they come to you just for, you know, the one thing. I think that's really good, and it's and I guess it keeps it fun and interesting as well.
Yeah, absolutely, because I think I've got, you, like I said, I've got my established bestsellers that I know do well, and, you know, it's great. Yeah, I think it's good to keep it fresh, and, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And so when you're talking about being at Disney, and you were talking about missing doing something with your hands, had you done something creative or sold anything prior to starting this business, or was it more that you were just missing having like a creative outlet?
I'd had an Etsy shop for a little while where I'd tried a few different things. I'd made some cushions that I'd embroidered. What else did I make? Some bracelets, like beaded bracelets, some earrings, candles. So I think I was literally just throwing my net
to
see what stuck. And I did that all the time in my little flat in London, which was a flat 102, which is where the name came from. So I think coming up with a name sometimes the hardest thing of everything.
I think so.
So when I set my Etsy shop up, I was just like, oh, I'm sat in my flat. It's flat 102. Let's give it a go. And that's stuck. And it's actually been nice because it links it back to where it all started.
Yes, yeah, so it sounds like you've been on Etsy for quite a while now then.
Yeah. Yeah, I have. I think when would it have been? I think it would have been a few years before I had Max, and he was born in 2014. So yeah, it's probably coming up to 10 years or so. But wow. It wasn't, like I said, it was dabbling, and it was like some candles and then some earrings and then some cushions. It wasn't consistent.
Yes, it wasn't really a brand as such.
No.
But other than that, I mean, I'm quite curious, other than that, what changes have you seen on Etsy over that time? Because I'm assuming it's moved on quite a lot in 10 years, because 10 years ago it was relatively new, I think.
Yeah, I think the biggest change is how many people in the UK now know about it. I think the traffic is huge. This, you know, which is great, and there's been a lot of great changes. I think they invested a lot of money into marketing, into seller development, into their community. But then alongside that, with the growth in traffic, then unfortunately you get a lot of, you know, sellers who are buying in cheap from China and selling it on. And whereas before it used to be so handmade, it's not anymore, I think. And it's hard as a seller to sell what I do at a price that I can make a living on and is what I feel my products are worth, when you've got people, when you search the same thing and you've got prints that are coming up for like £2. You're like, how do you compete with that? But on the other hand, I think the majority of Etsy sellers seem to be quite aware of that and are willing to pay for the handmade element, which is fab, because I think that can be off-putting if you're starting out and you see people on there selling what you make for so much cheaper. You're like, well, how can I make that work? Whereas actually I think people are quite discerning and are looking for quality, not just the cheapest thing they can find.
I think so. I mean, I shop on Etsy all the time because I want to support small businesses and I want to buy handmade products where possible. And I think that I really make a point of discerning really, because I think you can tell whether it's an original product that someone's made. Not always, but a lot of the time you can tell if it's something original someone's made or if it is something they've brought in from China, for example, because you might see the same. Something I've seen quite a lot is the same product, you know, listed by 5 people, and you think, yeah, well, you didn't all make that. I mean, you don't know if any of them did, but you know, yeah, for sure that not all of them have handmade that. You'd assume like, yeah, identical. Absolutely. And I think you're right, probably, that people that are buying on Etsy, hopefully, I do think you're right. I think the majority probably are quite discerning in that way, and they're not going for the cheapest thing. Because let's face it, if you wanted a cheap print, I don't think Etsy would be where you'd go necessarily. No. You'd probably go to eBay or Amazon or or somewhere different. I think if you're looking for something special and unique and handmade, you're going to pay a little bit more and you're prepared to do that.
Yeah, definitely.
And I wasn't going to talk about Etsy in great detail, but one other question I do have, if you don't mind, is obviously because you've been selling on there a long time, and at first it sounds like you were, you know, putting up listings and hoping things sold, whereas now you've got a store and a brand and a range. What's your best advice to someone who wants to sell on Etsy now? As in, what things are you doing now that you just weren't doing back in the early days when you were just...
I think
trying
the
it out.
Key thing on Etsy is it's basically a search engine at the end of the day. So getting your keywords right. So making sure, firstly, you know who your audience is, so you know what they're going to be searching for. Then really think about your product and the different ways you might describe it. So, you know, my wooden plaques, someone else might call it a pennant or a wall hanging. So making sure that all of those terms are in your title, in your description, and in your tags as well. And I think the key thing as well is making sure you've got really good photography. It doesn't need to be professional. You don't have to pay out for professional photography, but making sure that you're really selling your product. It's not, you know, bad lighting, you know, wonky, and, you know, really show your product off to the best of your ability. Show it on its own, show it in a setting as well. So showing it, you know, if it's a print for a kid's room, try and get some pictures in a kid's room, or make, you know, mock up if you've got a room, mock it up that looks a bit like a kid's room. I think that's the key things is, you know, there are hundreds and thousands of sellers on there, is making sure you stand out and that you come up as high as possible in the search rankings.
Thank you. And so I was going to talk a little bit about how it evolved from a hobby into a business, but it sounds like you already sort of had a business, and so it feels a bit like your business and your hobby merged, if that made sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Sound fair?
Yeah, I'm not sure I ever intended it to be a business. It definitely was just something I was doing alongside being at home with Max, and for a long time I said I was a stay-at-home mum, even when I was doing what I was doing as well. And I think I flipped that in my mind to that it is a business, then it started taking off more. I started taking it more seriously, even doing silly things like tax returns and things. You're doing those and all of a sudden you're like, oh gosh, you know, I might not be making millions, but I am making some money here, and it's a good thing. And I, you know, I can do that flexibly along being a stay at home mum, you know, might be working whilst I'm at home with them, but you know, I can do that alongside it. But yeah, it definitely was an evolution. I don't think I sat down and was like, right, this is what I'm gonna do. I'm getting a bit more like that now that both the kids are at school and got a bit more time. I'm trying to plan a bit more rather than it just being reactionary in terms of products and things, thinking about right when you know, thinking about Mother's Day and Easter and getting products ready in time for them. But yeah, it's all been a learning curve.
Out of interest, if you don't mind me asking this, because I'm genuinely curious about what you said, was it like you started to do well and then saw it as a business, or you started to see it as a business and then started to, and then the business started to improve? Does that make sense?
I'm
just genuinely curious. I hope you don't mind me asking.
No, not at all. I think the minute I saw it could be a business was when I first started putting my products into shops. And I didn't do wholesale until quite recently. But I was part of the Mamahood pop-up shop. I think that one was in Dulwich or Clapham. Anyway, in London somewhere, South London somewhere. And they were emailing me every week saying, oh, we sold out, we need more products. And I was like, oh, I haven't got any, I better make some. And I think that took me by surprise, because whilst Etsy was great and I'd got my own website by then, and I was getting a steady trickle of orders, it was a trickle, it wasn't, you know, I wasn't having to print every day, I wasn't having, you know, it was the odd order here and there. Whereas yeah, once I was in the shop and I was like, actually, if I put a bit of thought and time behind this, then, you know, I can turn that trickle into something a bit more consistent. So I think that was the moment for me, was when it started making really good money in the shop, which I shouldn't have, you know, maybe shouldn't have been so surprised about. Should have had a bit more belief, but it was a really lovely surprise. It was amazing.
I can definitely see your products would sell really well. I mean, I can see that they'd sell online, but I can definitely see they'd sell well in shops because they're so like visually like captivating. They're just really bright, and yeah, I can see that they'd really stand out in a shop. I can definitely see that. So I'm not surprised at all that they were selling really well. So you mentioned that you did that pop-up. Did you, and you've only started wholesaling recently, so have you been involved in other pop-ups or been the
I have. I also have still got my stuff in a pop-up shop. Well, I think it's more of a permanent shop. It started off as a pop-up shop in Whitney near Oxford. The shop in Whitney, it's called, or shop at Whitney, which is a really lovely shop as well, full of small local makers. And then I've also ran my own pop-up shop. With the Indie Collective, which part of the other business that I co-run with my friends.
Oh, we'll definitely talk about the Indie Collective in a moment, actually, because I really wanted to go into that as well. And the reason for asking really is I feel like pop-up shops can be a really nice way maybe to test out whether your products would selling in a shop. I think particularly in my mind, I'm thinking if someone was a bit unsure about wholesale and, you know, will my product sell, I'm thinking maybe a pop-up shop is a nice option for testing it out maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a real, I think the only thing with pop-up shops is most of them run on a sale or return basis, so you're not getting the money up front, and there's a commission element to it, which is often quite a lot less than you would look, you know, necessarily on wholesale. But I think it's definitely a lot less scary than you know, looking for wholesale premises. Because I think with wholesale, I don't know, I always felt a bit responsible. Like if it doesn't sell, then I feel bad that they're left with stock they can't get rid of. Whereas I think after having done the pop-up shops and seeing my stock sold well, I was much more confident than going out to other shops and saying, these are my best sellers. I know they sell well. You know, your audience is similar to the shops I'm already in. And I think they'd do really well for you. So it just, yeah, it gave me that confidence boost of being able to say, I know they sell.
Yeah, I think it's a nice bit of validation, isn't it? That, as you say, that you know, they've been in shops in front of people and they've sold, because it is a bit different buying in person and buying online. I don't know, I think it depends on the product, but some products definitely. So yeah, I think it's really good, because I'm all about sort of testing things out and not necessarily going, you know, all the way in on everything, because you can't.
Yeah.
So I think for like pop-up shops or even like a stall somewhere, it's just a really nice way. Yeah. And, just to see what the feedback is and how
I always
well
think with
fairs,
they're great for getting feedback. So I guess with a pop-up, you're still putting your stock there. You're not interacting with a customer. Whereas with a fair, you can, even if customers aren't necessarily saying it to you directly, you can listen to what they're saying to their friends, like, oh, I like that, but I wish it came in turquoise, or, you know, oh, that would be lovely for Jack's room when he's a bit older. You know, you start hearing, and you can start pinpointing more who your customer is. Like, are they people with older kids, younger kids, no kids, you know, where in their houses? And then going back to the Etsy thing, you can use those things in your descriptions in terms of what, you know, what you're, who you're selling to, what they're looking for, why they would use it.
Yeah, that's a really good tip, actually. So yeah, I guess if people are saying, oh, this is, you know, you hear consistently, this is going on my living room wall, for example, then you can weave that into your description or your title. Definitely. Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think that's something that a lot of us don't do, because quite often you write your product description, you do, maybe you do lots of keyword research, hopefully you do lots of keyword research, and you have a really good product description, and then it can just sit dormant for months or years. And revisiting it, particularly if you have that kind of feedback. Well, I think revisiting it anyway is a good idea, but particularly if you have feedback that, whether it's terminology or how people are using things, I think that makes sense. Yeah. That's great advice. Yeah, thank you for that. I think that's a really good tip. So let's talk a little bit, because I think we're sort of leaning towards there. Let's talk a little bit about the Indie Collective and what it is, why you founded it, and what you do.
Sure. So we co-founded the Indie Collective. So I run it with Adele and Carly. So they're both small business owners as well. Adele has Nutmeg Wall Art, which is like a vinyl stickers and stuff for your home. She also does commercial signage as well, so shop fronts and things. And then Carly has got an upcycling business. She does incredible hand painted clothing, so like jackets with then whatever, pretty much whatever you want on the back of it. And she also has a virtual PA business as well. So between us, it's a little bit bonkers, and throw in how many, 5 kids and one on the way as well, not mine. But yeah, it's all a bit bonkers. But we came together, Etsy do a thing called Etsy Made Local, which are live markets, in-person markets. And we came together to run one of those for Milton Keynes. And we did a few of those. They were really successful. We partnered with our local shopping centre, Into, who were really supportive. They they gave us great space. To have a craft fair in a shopping centre is like the best thing you can do, because you've got so much passing trade that you might not necessarily have ever got into, you know, if you'd had a standalone event. But while we were organising those, we always used to joke about, oh, it'd be amazing to have our own shop. One day we'll have our own shop. And then during the first lockdown, Into contacted us and said, we've got a shop that we think might work for you guys, if you'd like it to run a pop-up at Christmas 2020, which we jumped at. It was a really big unit. It was, if anyone's Milton Keynes based, it was the old Pret Into. So big unit, not necessarily a perfect space in terms of it being a food space rather than a shop space, but we made it work. We got all husbands and boyfriends involved in helping us turn it into this beautiful haven for small businesses. So we opened our doors in towards the end of October of 2020. We had, I think for that pop-up, we had about 70 odd different small businesses, mainly local, but we did have some from further afield as well. I think our furthest afield was Cornwall, which was pretty cool. And we ran that through until we got put into tier four, which was a shame. So we had, I think we were open for 2 weeks, then we had a 2 week fire break lockdown, then open again, and then it was tier four. So what should have been, I think, nearly 2.5 months was actually only 4 weeks in the end, but it was amazing. And the response from it locally was incredible. It was so busy. So yeah, that was our first pop-up. And then since then we ran one in May that was only supposed to be 6 weeks. But it was so successful. We kept it running through until the end of last year.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, from May right through to the end of December, which was fantastic. And again, we had, I don't even know the total of the, how many, hundreds of sellers, but we do it where you can come in and out. So you don't have to sign up to be in there. We ask that everyone's in there for at least 2 weeks, because I think it gives people time. If you've come in to see something, you want to be able to go away and think about it and come back and buy things. But most people, once they're in there, stay, which is fab. So then now we're just working out this year what our plans are. We'd love to do a fair again. I think people are ready for fairs now. So we're looking at a few different locations for that. We'd love to do some more pop-up shops, possibly back in the shopping centre or maybe on a high street this time. And we really want to develop the community side of it. So supporting small businesses more with things. Most of them are Etsy sellers, because that was our background, that's where it started from. We were the Etsy Milton Keynes team, and we still are, sharing our knowledge about all the Etsy side of things, sharing our knowledge about running small businesses, finances, all of those bits and bobs. I think we've worked it out between the three of us, we've got 22 years of small business life.
Oh, wow.
Which is bonkers when we say it like that, but yeah. So yeah, that's the Indie Collective, and it's free to be a part of. You know, there's no charges. So
that's amazing. And I will link every to that in the show notes. And oh, yeah, amazing. It's really exciting to know when you know what you're doing this year as well.
Shout about it.
Yeah, you do shout everywhere, and I can share it all out for you as well, because I think I definitely think people will be interested in being part of it. And when you were talking, I was thinking, wow, because I'm really familiar. I grew up nearby and I'm really familiar with Into. Well, when I was growing up, it was called The Centre at Milton Keynes. Was the market you did, was it in the big space outside? I think, is it the big square anyway?
No, so you've got Centre MK with John Lewis. Yeah. So we were in the other bit, the bit that's got Zara.
Oh, the new bit. Well, I call it the new bit. It's probably not new anymore. Yeah. But...
No, it's just had its 25th birthday.
It's really not new. I remember when that opened. That's it. Wow, that's making me feel so old, Steph, because I do remember that new bit opening. That's really funny. Oh, but that's also into that bit. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I won't bore everyone with Milton Keynes logistics, but I still think that is, and I know where you mean about the prep space as well. So yeah. I think that's amazing. And did Into give you any help with things like retailing? Because obviously there's a big difference, isn't there, between selling online and actually having a physical store. How did you know how to lay it out and what to put in the window? You know, I think there's a lot that must go into an actual shop.
We're really lucky that one of our sellers, Danielle, who runs Chris Paper Company, beautiful paper goods company, was a merchandiser for Paper Chase. So she gave us a lot of advice. And then Carly and Adele both have amazing eyes. They've, you know, they can look at a table and be like, ding, 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 and move things around. And all of a sudden it you look like you want to buy everything on it. So I think... those skills all coming together really worked. It was great. Into a great as well. They did give us some advice. But I think it was very different for them as well. They're used to, you know, Gap and Zara and Topshop, who have, you know, shops in a box almost. They come in, they do what they do in every location. So yeah, I think we were a bit of a new experience for them as well.
Yeah, well, that's good for everyone, isn't it? And definitely. You find that such a skill to be able to sort of take things and lay them out in a way that looks really appealing. That's not a skill that I have. I think that's such a skill, and it's amazing you have people to do that, because I feel like, I guess, such a lot of the success rests on how attractive a shop looks. Because if you walk past and the window looks uninspiring, you may just walk past.
I think one of the things we really wanted to do was sometimes pop-up spaces, you can hire you get a shelf and then you go in and you make your shelf look pretty, but we wanted it to look like a proper shop almost. Not that shops like that aren't proper shops, but we were thinking of it like a mini department store. So you would go in and there would be a kitchenwares section, so all the sellers that had different kitchenwares would be in that same area. And we didn't want to look at it about the sellers competing against each other. It was how they all complemented. And, you know, yes, there might be two different types of mugs, but you're appealing to very different people. So how do we, you know, style it to appeal to those people and make sure we're hitting the right notes for people? So we wanted it to be a real shopping experience. And, you know, in our heads, we were thinking, you know, Oliver Bonus and Anthropology, and, you know, those are real experiences when you go into them. And that's what we were trying to recreate in our little space as well.
That's amazing. And as I say, do let us know when you know what the plans are for this year.
Yeah, that's really exciting.
I love a pop-up shop as well. If I happen to be back home when it's open, I'll have to go and have a look, because I do like a pop-up.
Definitely.
So the final thing I wanted to ask about, if that's okay, is I know, and I'll be honest, if I can't remember whether you mentioned this to me or where I picked this up, but I know you're part of the NatWest Accelerator program at the moment, and I know you haven't been doing it for that long, so I definitely don't expect you to like share loads of us, but it'd be really good if you can just talk about first of all what it is for anyone who's might be curious, and then just give us a little bit on how it's going so far. I think that'd be really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. So the NatWest Accelerator Program is a free accelerator, which is incredible. A lot of accelerators are, you know, expensive. And you don't have to have a NatWest account either, which is, you know, I think it's amazing that they do that, offer that support with no real commitments from you. But yeah, it's nationwide. You can sign up online. They do have a quite strict criteria of what they want from you. You have to commit quite a lot in terms of time. And then they run networking sessions with other small businesses in your area. There's a real mix of where people are as well. There's like real startups who've got an idea, and that's it. They're getting ready to bring their idea to market. And then you've got people who are turning over, you know, millions of pounds, but are ready to take it even bigger than that. So the networking sessions are great in terms of there's a real learning from both ends. Because I think before you start, when you're so full of ideas, you're not jaded by what is and isn't actually possible. So you're getting those real inspiring ideas from those guys who are really fresh at it. And then you've got the guys who've been doing it for a long time who are like, not like, oh, you can't do that, but just have more realistic ideas as well. So you've got the networking events. They also run specific sort of tutoring events as well. So on like marketing strategy, a lot about mindset. One of their big things is, you know, you've got to have the right mindset to be a small business owner. It's really hard. You've got to be able to push through those days where it's tough, where you feel like you're not getting anywhere, you know, months and weeks of that sometimes, and you have to be able to keep going. But also you have to know when you've hit an actual wall. So how are you going to go over that wall, around that wall, under that wall? What's next? You know, learning when to stop is a good learning as well. And then you have monthly one-to-ones as well with your mentor. which are absolutely fantastic. They're really uplifting and positive, but they definitely push you. I mean, you know, we're doing it for the Indico, so it's the three of us doing it. But I've been able to take a lot out for Flat 102, but we were talking to them about we potentially in the future like to have a permanent space that possibly has a workspace space so people can come and do workshops, or they can hire it to come and work there themselves and that kind of thing. And our mentor was saying, you know, what's your time frame for this? And we were like, I don't know, 5 years? She was like, 18 months. And you're like, oh, okay. But I think with the knowledge that they've got and the contacts they have and things, they give you realistic pushes. It's not like, oh, you can do that in 3 days, off you go. It's, you know, okay, right, well, if you do, you know, do want to do it in 18 months, we'll help you, and these are the, you know, you need to come back to us and tell us what you need, and we'll help you find those people, those support networks. So yeah, we started ours in January, so we're a couple of months in. But so far it's been amazing. I'd really recommend it. It's all online at the moment due to all the COVID stuff, but they're just opening their hubs back up again, so there'll be some real life networking as well, which I don't know if that's more terrifying or not.
I find that scary.
I'm quite happy around my computer screen.
yeah I'm definitely much more comfortable here, but I think, as you say, it's good to be pushed in a like a gentle way.
Yeah.
Definitely, like, you need to be pushed out of your comfort zone a little. I think we all do, don't we?
Absolutely.
Need to be pushed a little bit. And so what sort of time commit, because you mentioned at the start that they ask you to commit a certain amount of time. So what is the time commitment that you have to give?
It's not like they've said you have to do 7 hours a week or anything like that. It's that they you won't get anything out of it if you don't put the time in. And whilst I don't think they'd throw you out of it, if you weren't holding up your end of the bargain, you know, it's not really fair on them either. If you go to each of your one-to-ones and you haven't actually done the follow-up, the work that you should have done, your homework almost. I think the networking bits aren't necessarily, you know, compulsory, but again, you're not getting as much out of it. So there's normally a couple of hours a week in terms of like of events going on, and then you have your monthly one-to-one. But yeah, it's more the work you need to put in terms of in between your one-to-ones.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, especially because it's been offered for free. I guess if you're not making progress and you're not doing the work that you need to be doing, it's quite rude, isn't it, to put it bluntly? Yeah. Because you're getting all of this support for free, so yeah. I can see that. And yeah, I can see that. I think that if it sounds like they're giving an awful lot.
Yeah, loads.
So you need to be sort of doing the same. And final question I had, and sorry to ask so many questions, but I genuinely think this will be really interesting. As you mentioned, there was criteria you had to meet. Is it an application? Is it so as well as meeting the criteria, is it like if you want to do it and you meet the criteria you're in, or is there an application process to go through?
So there was an application process. I don't know what their criteria was. So you basically had to fill an online application in, and then you had an interview, which we put our application in like so last minute. I don't think we'd realise there was an actual deadline. We just did it thinking, well, the next time round they're opening, we'll be in there. We hadn't realised that they were actually open, and I think we put ours in 24 hours or something before the deadline closed. So then it was a bit of a panic of like, oh, we need to get you interviewed before the next deadline finishes. And it was all so, yeah, it should have been a 60-second pitch as part of your interview, and then a chat, an informal chat bit. But we, with the shop, and it was coming up to Christmas and stuff, it was a bit messy. And we ended up having to do it off the cuff, our 60-second pitch off the cuff, which was like, But I think as we were in the thick of it at that moment, we had the shop open, we'd been talking lots about what we wanted to do. It actually flowed really well. And they told us on the phone that we were in, which was great. And then it all started really quickly in January. So yeah, I'm not sure what the actual criteria are, but they did, they asked lots of questions about where we want to be, what, you know, what our plans were and things. So I don't think it's like you need to be turning over X amount of money or anything like that. I think it's more about what sort of personality, I think personality maybe, in terms of, are you willing to put the work in? Are you willing to knuckle down? Do you want to grow? Do you want to expand and things?
Amazing, thank you. And I think that makes sense. And that may possibly also, I guess you have to have some sort of vision of where you want your business to go as well, because it sounds like it's about, well, it's in the name, isn't it? It's about accelerating and moving forward. So thank you for telling us all of that, because I think it's really interesting. And I'm going to try and find a link to put in the show notes. I'm pretty sure applications won't be open now, but I'll try and find some sort of web page I can share so that if people are listening and are interested, then they've got somewhere to go and have a look at least.
Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you. So I have one final question, if that's okay, before we finish, which is, what would your number one piece of advice be to other product creators?
I think it would be to just start, just try it, put it out there. I mean, I probably should take that advice myself, because I do have about 5 new products sat here that I haven't put out in the world yet. But I think that is the biggest thing, is, you know, put it out there. It might not sell, but at least you'll know then, and you can develop it and, you know, change it and hone it until it's something that does sell. Or it might sell amazingly and, you know, you'll surprise yourself and give yourself that massive boost of confidence to go again. I think it's, you know, just get started, just get it out there somehow, some way, whether it's your own website or Etsy or pop-up shops, or just put it out there and try it.
That's really good advice, thank you, Seth.
It's all right.
And thank you for everything that you've shared. So I'm going to link to Flat 102 and the Indies Collective and everything we talked about in the show notes. People can go and find a bit more from you. And yeah, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. It's been fun chatting.
Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end of this episode. If you enjoyed it, please do leave me a review. That really helps other people to find this podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes, and do tell your friends about it too if you think that they also might enjoy it. You can find me at vickyweinberg.com. There you'll find link to all of my social channels. You'll find lots more information, all of the past podcast episodes, and lots of free resources too. So again, that's vickyweinberg.com. Take care, have a good week, and see you next time. Hi, this is just a little note. Say, if you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes, and you would like to, I don't know, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.